Today's episode has been brought to you by Fairway Market. For more information, visit www.fairwaymarket.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
On Thursday, that means it's time to meet your maker. I'm your host, Rachel Wharton. My guests today are Marshall Lewis Reeves and Lauren Utvich. The two run Farm to Baby from Greenpoint, Brooklyn, delivering field source purees, just like a CSA, to babies all over Brooklyn and some lower Manhattan. But the really interesting thing is that neither one of them actually have a baby. Marshall and Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So my first question to you is, of course, I feel like a lot of baby-focused businesses, people that I've spoken with, the obvious driving force is that they wanted to feed their children. So why baby food and not another jam or pickle or you know, artisanal banh mi?
Well, so we're kind of in the phase of our lives where a lot of people that we know are starting families and having babies. We're not necessarily at that stage just yet, but because of my background, I study molecular biology and metabolism, and Lauren has a background in food.
Yes.
We end up being the people that people contact when they're like, oh, my baby's about to start eating food. What should he or she eat?
And people are actually asking you those questions?
Yeah. It turns out that we're, I guess, a kind of experts, I suppose, when it comes to some of these things. People trust us maybe a bit more than sort of the internet, right? Because it's a big place.
Did you know the answers off the top of your head?
No. Actually, we ended up doing a lot of research. We have big, big stacks of baby cookbooks and baby nutrition books and a lot of research on the web. So my background, right, so I'm really good at looking at sort of primary literature, right? So things from, you know, doctors and researchers of all sorts. And then Lauren sort of on the culinary side did a lot of experiments.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Lauren, can you give us like the brief rundown of your resume?
I
studied a lot of things.
Yeah. I did. You know me from my boiled peanut days when I was working at the Greenpoint Food Market, late and great. I studied at the French Culinary Institute and at the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. So, my special interest lies at the intersection of, you know, functional foods and, delicious foods. The idea that the revolution really has to be delicious.
Yes. And you also spent some time working directly with farmers at the farmers market, right?
I did. Yeah. I've worked for a couple of New York State farms. Garden of Eve Organic Farm out on the North Fork, mm-hmm. and Red Jacket Orchards, which is upstate in the Finger Lakes.
Do you get to live in a yurt when you work with Garden of Eve?
I don't believe they have any yurts on the property. They do have a great old farmhouse where the apprentices live.
That's so cool. So you're obviously, you're in the food world, you're cooking, you're working a farm stand, you're going to culinary school. What was your job before this, or it may still be, as a matter of fact?
So I'm actually wrapping up a PhD in molecular biology at Princeton. So I'm
hopefully. How do you do that? You eat baby food en route back and forth between commuting?
Yeah, it's actually, we ended up eating a lot of the early sort of test batches, which sort of calls into question what some of the things when we're sort of like building a kind of product library. And so we're going out to the grocery store and we're buying all of the baby food that they have and tasting it. And it's really a frightening world out there when it starts to come to, you know, pureed spaghetti and meatballs. And
it's really pureed. It's not just super squishy.
It's really pureed.
I wonder, though, if they're making the spaghetti and meatballs and pureeing them, or if they're just taking those components that would, and then, you know, combining those. It's hard to figure out.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the fact of the matter is that just because what they end up doing is they end up canning it. So essentially the process of heating it to, you know, around 250 degrees all the way through, which sort of from a culinary perspective is kind of an abomination that you would never cook food to that temperature, because what ends up happening is that both on the flavor side, the food kind of tastes like mush and not very good, and then sort of on the science side, you destroy anywhere between say 60% and 80% of like micronutrients like vitamin C, folate, vitamin B1, these things that are really important for an infant. You're just cooking out of the food.
Are they then putting it back in? Is that what they do?
In some of them, they do. They add, you know, citrus juice or vitamin C directly, so that it's not, you know, totally there. And but there are some people who are trying some nutraceutical kinds of approaches to like adding the nutrients back in. But to us, it seemed really obvious. How about you just don't
give them the food?
Just give them the food itself, because that's exactly what babies should be eating. So that's basically where we're coming from.
So did you have that realization as you started to develop the business, or was this as people are asking you, and you both have these backgrounds where it's like obviously 1 + 2 = 7,000. So like when did like these are very this is clarity right, that you're talking of. So when did these thoughts occur to you?
Right. Was there, you're asking, was there
a light bulb
a particular, an aha moment?
We should be
moment.
Doing this.
Uh-huh. No, I can sort of point to one particular aha moment. That night when, you know, I mentioned it to Marshall, and he said, well, a subscription delivery baby food service. Well, we have to do it. And so
wait, that's you. That was step one. It was subscription delivery baby food service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that this essentially would get past all of the sort of barriers to food distribution, because there are a lot of famous people who believe these things, that we don't necessarily have so much problem in terms of growing the right food. The problem is getting that food to the right places.
Right.
And so, for instance, for our food, the only way that we're really able to get it to people is to more or less rush it by bicycle courier from the commercial kitchen in Greenpoint where we work, basically immediately to their homes.
Right.
Right. And this idea of like entering into the food distribution center, you know, it could go to Connecticut and spend 5 weeks before it ends up coming back to a grocery store.
Right.
And so that's why
and
baby...
sit at the grocery store for a week, too.
Or a month or more. And so this is why you can imagine that baby foods have developed in the way that they have, much like sort of canned vegetables.
Right.
But we're sort of in the middle of a, you know, very delicious food renaissance, where people are saying this isn't the way that it has to be, and that we can, you know, source from local producers and really reduce that time between something growing in the ground and something on your plate, or maybe on the baby spoon.
And then also because of the nature of the freshness of what you create, you pretty much have to deliver it to people.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so I guess I'm curious. So I want to know a little bit about how you like where you make them. Is it like a borrowed kitchen? And is it essentially like a gigantic blender? Is everything blended, because as you were saying, there's this huge science to baby food that you had to learn and understand and then break apart and put back together again. So like, how do you approach? Like, you're not just making one puree to give to a baby. You're trying to provide everything. So, like, how do you approach that? What do you have to make and do?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, from the very beginning, there were things that if you put them into a blender to try and make a puree out of, it is counterintuitive, the things that come out as really delicious, silky purees
Brussels
that babies
sprouts,
love.
I'm thinking of, uh-huh. right? In particular, that we were just really amazed by how silky smooth they came out. And you wouldn't necessarily think so. But
those are little tough little cabbages,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then there ends up being very little like sulfur flavor if you steam them in an oven, for instance.
And the pre-process step too probably makes loads of difference whether you blanch or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So was that all
blanching,
trial by
steaming,
error,
roasting? We do a lot of recipe development and testing, and for that we employ the use of a test baby. Our downstairs neighbors have an infant, Asa,
whose godmother is a famous chef.
She is indeed. He has. Very exacting standards, I must say, but they adjusting aside, they've been a great help to us, and we're you know really glad to have Asa.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I suppose you probably looked. One of you has looked this up. Babies have different palates than we do, right?
So there are different schools of thought on this. So you might imagine that what you should do if you kind of play into this thought that babies have a very specific palate is that you basically would give babies sugar water all of the time, because that's apparently what they want to eat the most. There are actually a number of things that you can go and buy at the pharmacy that are supposed to cure any number of baby ailments that basically are just sugar water, because it turns out you give a baby something sweet and the baby becomes less fussy. So this is obviously not the road to health and wellness when we're living in a...
May do the same thing. It's just self.
Yeah.
They just give it to themselves.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And this is why, you know, right around one-third of six-year-olds in this country are obese, is because what ends up happening is that people really want to start with the foods that are the absolute sweetest from the very start. So most
eating them.
Eating them. Uh-huh. So the things that are... on the market, a lot of them are something like 10% sugar by weight. So this is both formula and then into foods and then toddler foods and little kids' foods are the same sweetness by mass as Coca-Cola. which is just incredible when we think about it. It's like, right, you taste them and they're just way, way, way too sweet for something that for you us. Believe should be spinach. Even.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Really? So that you, because you tasted them all. How many brands? Do you know how many brands you had to go through?
Six,
the six,
I think,
big,
I think,
ones.
Yeah, so there are a lot of organic brands, mm-hmm, that are growing really quickly right now, mm-hmm, and then Gerber is sort of the industry king. They have something, right, like 80% of the market, which is kind of incredible when you think about it. They've been on top of the market since 1927, when they basically invented the idea of putting baby food in a jar.
Right.
And then a couple people followed a few years later. So Beechnut is sort of in second place, and mm-hmm, then there are a lot of these upstart organic brands, which is they've sort of decided that they're going to source organically and then package in a pouch rather than in a jar.
But that's the only difference. Mm. It's pretty similar otherwise. Mm.
They have a lot more sweet fruit content. Uh-huh. So
right. The primary ingredient is typically a very sweet fruit, mango, banana, apple. Bowl. Not that there's anything wrong with those foods, but when the food is labeled as spinach, you really, mm-hmm, would expect the ingredient list to reflect that, but it doesn't always.
So the first ingredient for spinach is often apple juice.
Indeed. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I have to go taste some of these just to see what it's like. Which you probably spent a ton of time doing. Were there any? Were there any that you actually enjoyed? Was there like one, like, oh, the mango from Blah Blah is actually tolerable?
No, it's true that they're delicious. If you take all the spinach out of a spinach puree and pack it full of mango, I mean, it's awesome. But it's dessert is what it is, and right, it's not what you want to be the foundation of your child's diet. If we are what we eat, then a lot of babies in America today, right now, are apples and mangoes, right, and bananas, right? But their parents are under the impression that they're giving their kids a well-rounded and balanced diet full of green vegetables, and it's not always the case, unfortunately.
Right.
So then along this route, what we decided is that we wanted babies to be taking the first steps to developing a broad palate for, mm-hmm, a healthy lifetime. So the vegetables that we select, and as well as the fruits, that they're things that grow in the region. So we source from farms in New Jersey, New York, and
you can actually read all. Yeah, I think, yeah, you have on your website. Mm-hmm, you can click, yeah, and see, yep, the ones you do.
Yeah, exactly. So we obviously don't have mangoes and bananas and a lot of these things growing. Well, instead, what we have are vegetables, real foods that babies, we want to have them grow to love these foods so that when they are 2 or 3 or 4 years old, they're the baby that loves Brussels sprouts.
Right.
They're the baby that loves spinach or turnips
or fava beans.
We haven't done fava beans.
Because then one of you two would have to peel them.
Very labor intensive, yeah. It's true.
We do hand shuck peas, actually, so we are a little bit familiar with
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Do you guys literally do that yourself?
I do
all of it. It's just the two of you doing everything right now.
We actually have help in the kitchen now as we've been growing. It's getting well past the point that we're able to manage all of the logistics of things. Mm-hmm. So we have
we've got some help in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. We've got help in the delivery department. We employ the use of a bicycle messenger courier service.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and how soon is, have you ever, the Blueprint Cleanse, like their juices are delivered the very afternoon. It's probably something similar, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
So how does it work? Do you go to the farmers markets, or do you have direct relationships with farms? How do you get your product, and then are you going on Saturday morning and cooking that afternoon?
Well, from having worked at the farmers markets and for a couple of different New York State farms, I was able to develop these relationships with farmers and get to know certain individual farms. And so we've chosen the farms that we wanted to work with, people who we think are doing really great work. And we get what's best, what's fresh, what's in season, and we take the produce to the kitchen, and we work overnight. We work out of a commercial kitchen in Greenpoint that is a caterer's kitchen during the day, and we, uh-huh, rent space at night. And so I'm working overnight to make the food, and then it goes out the very next morning.
How early?
8 o'clock is when we dispatch our deliveries.
Mm-hmm. And it's always to people's houses, and people pick it up.
Not always. Not always people's homes. We've been delivering to people's offices as well. But oftentimes there is a nanny or a doorman home to receive the delivery. We just ask that there be a someone there to receive the food, to put it in the fridge right away, because it is a fresh food and has to be refrigerated.
Do you know, are most of your customers people who are already a member of a other they diehard Green Market shoppers, CSA there's, members?
There's actually some very non-overlapping demographics that we're finding. So especially our early customer base were a lot of people who were shoppers at farmers markets or members of CSAs, and this we were kind of just an extra service to make things a little bit easier, so they didn't have to be making vegetables from their CSA 100% of the time for the baby as well as for themselves. But now we're finding actually there are a lot of people that are much more health focused, and that I think in many ways having a baby has completely changed the way that they think about food, the way they shop for groceries, the way they prepare meals. All of this is now different, and it's really fun and exciting that we get to kind of be a part of this transformative food experience for them, in terms of like they're now thinking, they're like, oh, I guess I should go to the farmer's market and I should start to buy, you know, they have the best turkey there, do you guys know about it?
Right.
You know, And so it's really awesome that we're taking part in this. And so we're actually now doing we have some incentive programs where parents are getting some things like cooking classes for toddler foods. And people are really, really responding really well to this. They're really interested in learning more about food and making it healthier.
Yeah, I think it's great that one of our customers, her first introduction to turnips was through her baby's food. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And with that, we're going to take a short break and come back for more of Meet Your Maker, which is every Thursday at 3 p.m.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information. And be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
Welcome back to Meet Your Maker. My guests today are Marshall Lewis Reeves and Lauren Utvich, who feed Brooklyn kiddos through Farm to Baby. Hey, you guys.
Hey, Rachel.
Okay, so when we left, we were talking about how parents are just discovering turnips through their baby's food. But I'm curious how you decide what you're sending out to parents. Like, do you just go to the farmer's market willy-nilly, or is there a lot of thought, research, and nutritional science behind this?
So there are a couple of different factors that we kind of have to balance back and forth in order to make everything work out. So one thing is just sort of what is fresh and what is in season. We don't want things that are coming from really far away. We want things that are growing in the New York region right now. So that's a sort of major determinant. But it turns out that people have been able to live on agriculture in the New York area for a really long time without, you know, importing things from
the Dutch founder,
precisely.
Much.
Yeah. So
Indians, when they were eating oysters the size of your forearm from the Gowanus Bay.
Mm-hmm. So in this way, that's, I guess, kind of the thing that really limits us from the top level. But then within that, you know, you imagine that we could just pick, you know, fruits every week and not have any vegetables on the menu at all. But that really is not what's going to be doing a great service for the babies, sort of nutritionally or as well as going forward in life, as we sort of have been discussing. So what we work really hard to do is make sure that the menu is balanced both kind of from a flavor perspective as well as from a nutrition perspective. So we don't want everything to just be really sweet, and so we work to have things like there's always something much like a green leafy-ish vegetable or a squash or something that
whatever's
has,
in season,
whatever
much.
Happens to be in season exactly. And then usually there will be something that is like a fruit that grows generally on a tree, something kind of from an orchard, and then often a tuber or a root vegetable of some kind. These are the characters that start to bring a lot of these things that are, say, like vitamin A precursors and beta carotenes and anthocyanins, all these sorts of things. And now that it's the summer, we're actually getting a lot of really awesome brightly colored foods. So there, you know, there. This allows us to really have these menus that between four foods on Tuesday and four foods on Friday, the babies are really getting to eat the rainbow.
Right. Do you say that's? Is that on like the little cards that you deliver with books? Eating the rainbow, which is probably important.
There's actually a nonprofit from Canada, I believe, that this is actually what they're called. Is they're called Eat a Rainbow, and they have a whole bunch of educational materials that
it makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. It's a shame that it's actually the marketing language for Skittles. Rather
oh,
than,
is it
right,
really?
Yeah.
Taste a rainbow.
Right? So you should be eating things that are the colors of Skittles, but not actually Skittles, because
actual
that would be
Skittles.
That would be bad for your baby.
Sounds like a lot of beets. Beets are Skittles are basically beet colored.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, but even just within the beet family, when we're talking about the farmers that we work with, they actually don't just have one beet. So for instance, we have we work with like a white beet, a golden beet, as well as the sort of the typical red beet that a lot of people
candy
envision
stripe.
When they
don't
think,
forget the
oh,
candy
and then
stripe.
There's also a candy
Does that
stripe.
Come out pink?
It doesn't, you know. It's sort of disappointing. I thought it would too.
What color does it come out as?
It's kind of like a grayish, brownish color. Which
you know,
was,
when you get the purple green beans at market, and you're so excited, and you take them home and you cook them, and they're green.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a similar thing happens with the candy stripe beet.
So then, do you naturally just go with pink, or well, with regular beets, or with or white beets?
You know, the white beets are really popular because they're sweet and delicious, just like a red beet, but they don't stain. And
right.
You know, especially when feeding a baby, and there's a lot of food is ending up outside of the baby. moms really appreciate that. There's less cleanup.
This is something that you knew before going into it, or this is feedback you're getting from your customers?
This is
customers?
Feedback. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get some great feedback from our customers.
This also is all produce. So do you, does that mean that you are only for a younger child, or is there a certain point where you have to start making artisanal spaghetti and meatballs and pureeing them?
So just like you would imagine with a person, is that even though you start the introduction of things like whole grains or legumes or other protein sources, you really want a huge component of your diet to be things that grow from the earth.
Yes.
So you still want lots of fresh produce in your diet. So a lot of parents, as their child is getting older and they're starting to introduce some things like meats or other proteins, these sorts of things, they're continuing to use our food as like a supplement.
Right. You can just feed them actual food at that point.
Mm-hmm. But it's still like, instead of maybe sending your son or daughter off to school with a thing of applesauce, you could send your son or daughter off with a Brussels sprout puree.
Yes.
or any number of different things. We have a number of customers that are, you know, in the kind of 2 to 3 range, and when they've kind of thought that maybe they needed to move on to some different foods, they've stopped for a week, and then they've gotten back in touch with us and said, this isn't going to work. Like, my kid loves the food so much that we have to keep buying it from you. So this has been really, we've been fortunate, I suppose, to get some kids hooked on vegetables.
Right.
Maybe we should call Guinness about this, but.
So you probably obviously can't use nuts, since that's like majorly taboo with children. Mm-hmm. But do you use seeds or other things like that?
So we've been doing a lot of recipe development to try to make some of these more textured foods that start to introduce these things, whole grains and legumes, and eventually we would love to start to include some protein. But the logistics of making all of these foods, making them delicious, and making them such that we can get them to people on a reliable basis is really hard. So we've been trying to conquer this, but it's sort of still on the test kitchen phase, I would say.
My next question was is it literally just everything is pureed?
So
really,
there were some people their baby learns this kind of crab claw motion. You can imagine if you take your thumb and your forefinger and pinch them together.
Uh-huh.
And some babies decide that once they have this technique, they don't want to eat anything pureed like anymore. If they can't pick it up with a pincer, it's no good. So some parents they have a lot of lateral thinking skills being parents, and so they'll make things like sort of little baby Christini. So they'll take these little O's and they'll dollop our food onto them. Some parents are...
But I mean, you could serve pureed Brussels sprouts on a Christini at Franny's.
I think that's a great idea.
I'm sure they do it. Yes. But is there anything other than the vegetables? Do you add any spicing, salt, pepper, anything?
No, we haven't been doing that. We've been thinking about some ways to roll that out. So, for instance, what you might imagine a lot of parents would really like is they would maybe want a spice kit, and then recommendations, right? Pairs well with, so that you know the parents get to be involved in this flavor selection, which is something that I think a lot of people might really respond well to.
That's pretty interesting.
But a lot of people really like to introduce the spices one at a time, because babies typically have far more sensitive palates to a lot of things, like say cinnamon or even savory things. So
chilies. And have you ever gotten anywhere close to chilies?
No, I think that's a little too advanced for us right now.
Well, and so I think we were also talking, Lauren, this is a question for you, really. Like, how do you know when this is the way a pureed Brussels sprout should taste? Because there's a technique before you puree, and that makes a big difference in flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And are you ever using compounds like onions with something?
No, we don't. We don't use any alliums at the moment. But you know, there is a lot of technique involved, and you have to know when the food is just done, and it can't be overdone. Especially with the green vegetables, they'll lose their color and a lot of flavor too. And going back to what Marshall was saying before about cooking foods twice and at high heats, and the process of canning removes so much nutritive value, but flavor as well. And really. Front in our minds is nutrition, of course, and then a close second is flavor, and so that really that you know determines how we prepare the foods.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't even mentioned how beautiful they are in the jars.
Oh well, thank you.
So they're in Weck, which is the Weck, right? That's the type
it
of
is.
Ball jar. And and why did you decide to do you take the jars back and then clean them and then reuse them, or
we
how
do.
Does it work?
We do. We collect the jars upon redelivery, and we sterilize them for reuse. And we chose the jars because they're BPA free, and we know that's a concern for a lot of parents. And a lot of the other canning jars we looked at have a BPA lining in the lid. So we went with the Weck jar. It does happen to be very beautiful, and we brought some here today with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for you to taste here on the air. I'm
to I actually want to taste them.
Yes,
we can. Are they within reach?
I think so. They must be
somewhere. Did they get lost in the office?
I know we brought them in with us. We must have. I think
I'll taste them after the show, and sure. I'll file a blog report letting everyone know. But I mean, I actually almost, I eat, I mean, the way you're, the food you're describing is essentially what I eat, just served in a Weck jar instead of on a crostini.
Well, and that's the idea too, right, is that I have this notion that babies are people too, and they
just, very small ones.
Yeah, so small. They deserve to eat as well as we do, and there are so many people in our community concerned with good food, and there just really wasn't anything for their babies. And you know, if you don't have the time to spend hours in the kitchen each week steaming and roasting and pureeing,
or cleaning your blender,
that too.
You can go through blenders. When you use a blender a lot, you probably use super fancy. What are the Vitamix? There's whatever the commercial version of a Vitamix is.
The Vitaprep. We have. Yeah. We actually have a RoboCool.
Oh, is that what you do it in?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just one.
Just one.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of horsepower, so yeah. it
doesn't
it burn goes
out.
Through. It goes through things pretty quickly.
That's amazing. And then how do you scoop it into the jar? You're doing it by everything by hand at this point, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've actually got kind of a packing method, so we have to do this packing aseptically. So we end up having using this sort of silicone apparatus to put the things in the jars. And
uh-huh.
We actually have two different sizes of jars. So for older babies, I guess maybe you might call them toddlers at that point, we have a larger jar size that people have been using. So we had to have some of this flexibility for the tiny jars and the big jars. It was actually kind of a strange discovery that we found that people would much prefer a huge number, like say three or four of mm-hmm. the small jars that would equal the same amount that was in
one
large jar. Yes, it was really strange that people like the little jar because it's very similar, I suppose, to what they think exists
in the baby food arena already.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So this was what ended up being really popular. It was kind of strange.
And they have to stay refrigerated because they're all super fresh.
Mm-hmm,
and they're
exactly.
not pasteurized or anything.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Right. We do use these canning jars, but it's not a canned food. It's a fresh food.
And I guess just purely from like a how your business works kind of point of perspective is that when people order exactly what they want, you tell them what they get.
It's sort of kind of like you mentioned a CSA uh-huh. earlier. It's kind of like the CSA in terms of the farmer knows what is in the ground, mm-hmm. and that really determines what you end up getting.
Right.
And so a lot of parents they want to like select, you know, the menu. Oh, my baby loves this. I want double of these. From a logistics perspective, it kind of turns into a nightmare. So we say that this is what the menu is
uh-huh.
because we picked it because this is what's fresh. And actually, this is a balanced nutritive profile in terms of foods. And so this is what we're going to deliver to you. So sometimes we get a little bit of pushback. People want a little more flexibility than we're willing to provide.
More turnips, but they taste so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what's on your blog post, is like you're telling people what they're going to expect. How soon do they go up before people get what they're getting to eat?
Usually it's the menu for the day is going out right as the food is arriving.
And also in thinking about you, I know one of the things you've said in other interviews is that you also care about small farms and the environment and the earth, and this is one way to support small farms too. And I actually think that because what you're doing is pureeing, and it doesn't need to be an absolutely visually perfect leaf or Brussels sprout, are you able to help farmers? Are you taking stuff that they wouldn't maybe be able to sell right at market in some way?
One thing, especially when it comes to this part of the country and say organically grown fruits, is a lot of organically grown fruits look very unappealing compared to their conventionally grown counterparts.
Right. Yes.
And so I would say, especially for organically grown fruits, that we're able to use things that don't sort of look, I'd say, 100% perfect.
Right, or the giant turnips and beets that no one wants to buy. Which might make your lives easier.
Yeah, well, I mean, we end up buying, usually we kind of pride ourselves on the idea, actually, that we're not sort of buying the second tier produce, that we buy the top tier produce, because that's what you would buy if you went to the store for your baby. You would want the best, right. Just like we
yes.
would. So we aren't buying
you aren't buying stuff that's
flight.
Wilted.
Mm-hmm. Right, no, we're not buying seconds. But, you know, and like Marshall said, they're not always, calendar girls.
Right.
These, the apples, when you don't spray an apple in New York State, it's not nearly as beautiful as yes. the shiny red delicious apples mm-hmm. you see.
But that's just the reality of real farming and real food. You go to a farmer's market, you buy an heirloom tomato, and many people would claim that they're ugly. But
yes.
beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And so when it's a food, you imagine that you do eat with your eyes, but you also eat with your mouth. So these heirloom tomatoes end up being absolutely fantastic, although maybe slightly ugly from the outside.
Well, that is a perfect ending because we are out of time. This has been Meet Your Maker. Look for pictures of this beautiful baby food on heritageradionetwork.com and listen up to Meet Your Maker every Thursday at 3 p.m. Thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.